Good morning. This is a reading of the Brockton Enterprise for today, Thursday, August 20th, 2026, read to you by Mark White of the Talking Information Center. In the headlines today, timeout rooms at school are no longer going to be in use. Timeout rooms in Brockton public schools that lacked ventilation are no longer in use as the district adopts new state special education regulations that took effect on August 17th. That includes two timeout rooms at Downey Elementary School. The changes follow concerns raised by Deputy Fire Chief Brendan Weeks, who described one Downey room as a converted closet in a politely worded but scathing email to the superintendent in December of 2025. Weeks said in the email he inspected the space and deemed it unsafe for student use, ordered the district to stop using rooms like it. Langley said that the district had three timeout rooms in total that appeared similar to the one at the Downey. According to photos, the small room had a tiled floor and red door with a little window and was empty except for a toy basketball. There was also one at Anorn Elementary School in addition to at Downey. It wasn't a closet space and had proper ventilation, but it did have a bare-bones interior. We had to talk about how we could make it more conducive to a student being able to regulate, she said, and have sensory items and paint on the walls, those type of things, that feel sometimes small, especially in older buildings, where I think if you've been there for a while, you get to a place of maybe not seeing all the things that can be improved. Langley said the administrators had already begun ensuring the rooms complied with the new regulations before receiving Weeks' email. She said the email was simply a reminder. Timeout spaces are meant to help students in special education calm down if they become dysregulated, according to Langley. She said the district favors terms like time away and sensory rooms because they're less negative and more trauma-informed. State regulations use the term timeout. It's sort of a removal of that stimulating environment, and it's a way that they can have one-on-one support from one adult that is co-regulating with them, she said. Prior to the new state regulations going into effect, the district has followed the state's previous guidelines on how to use such rooms. Asked whether students were ever left alone in those rooms, she wrote, during timeout, students were always supervised by a staff member. Asked whether students were ever locked in the room or otherwise prevented from leaving, he said students were not locked in time-away spaces. In the instance of a student demonstrating an extremely dysregulated state at risk to themselves or others, the student may have been asked to wait before rejoining the instructional space until demonstrating the ability to co-regulate with a staff member or self-regulate. Of the 3,400 students across 77 special education programs at Brockton Public Schools, very few enter timeout. The small share is concentrated in six elementary school, substantially separate classrooms that serve students with social-emotional challenges. Each class has 12 students. Timeout. The types of outbursts that require timeout become rare by middle school. The district is working to reduce the use of these rooms by training staff and intervention strategies, how to calm a student so they don't need a timeout, and co-regulation, which is to help them exit timeout more quickly. Langley also said she plans to review time-away usage data. The goal is to avoid excluding kids from instruction for long periods of time. Well, that all sounds like a very favorable step. Also on the front page, Avon gets state grant to boost emergency services. Avon officials announced that town and its public safety departments will receive funding through an $8.8 million state grant supporting the community's transition to the Holbrook Regional Emergency Communication Center. The center recently received over $8.8 million through the FY 2027 State 911 Department Regional Public Safety Answering Point and Regional Secondary Public Safety Answering Point and Emergency Communication Center. The funding will support Avon's transition to the regional dispatch center while providing resources for equipment upgrades, infrastructure improvements, and public safety security measures. This funding recognizes the value of regional emergency communications and the benefits the HRECC transition will bring to Avon, said Police Chief Jeffrey Buchan. State 911 department grant funding is vital as we transition to the HRECC and our entire community will be better protected following this shift. Under the grant, the town will receive $252,000. The police department will receive $170,000 and the Avon Fire Department will receive $114,000. The town will also receive funding dedicated to emergency communications equipment upgrades. Chief David Chera said upgraded emergency communications capabilities will strengthen public safety efforts locally and throughout the region. A portion of the grant will pay for more than $5 million in equipment acquisitions while supporting the integration of Avon and several other communities into the HRECC. Participating towns include Dover, East Bridgewater, Fairhaven, Holliston, Norwood, Sherburn, Stoughton, and Sudbury. So that's good news. Also on the front page of the Enterprise this morning, new fitness studio aims to empower women. Camille Bierga has been helping women find community through fitness for over a decade. The Brockton resident has been a fitness instructor for 14 years and is the founder of a Like a Lady production, a brand focused on encouraging women to find confidence in their wellness journeys. Society pictures a lady as a certain way, she said. Anytime we did something silly like twerking or chest pressing 60s or just doing things that normal ladies wouldn't do, we would just say, like a lady. It's just a way for us to really connect with each other and just being confident and comfortable with who we are, she said. Whether for single mothers or handle things that normally guys handle, it's more than just a saying. It's really what our community is. Now, Berga is breaching off on her own, opening Class, a new fitness studio coming to Raynham. The grand opening was scheduled for Saturday, August 15th. I welcome everyone to come and experience what Class is really all about. Berga said the name for a studio comes from the way people tend to speak about her classes, using the term as shorthand for the workout. I wanted something that was easy, something that people could remember, and I asked people, when you come to my class, what do you say? And they were like, I always say I'm going to class. Class was good. I can't right now. I'm going to class. All right. We'll name it Class, she said. She said she settled on opening in Raynham because of a lot of her fitness communities from the surrounding area. I'm from Brockton, however, a lot of my students and following are from this area, so I thought Raynham would be a great spot to cover Brockton, Taunton, Fall River, New Bedford. It's been in the making since January. Berger said class offerings will range from Zumba to step aerobics to cardio boxing, kickboxing. And she's also adding a bands and booty class geared at building lower body strength. Zumba is one of my most popular classes, she said. There's going to be different things that we can do at this studio with team building, empowering women to do more, so I'm really excited. Now I have my own place where I can offer a little bit more than just fitness. Class will have 30 classes a month and operate 7 days a week. Berga said she couldn't be happier to be able to open up her studio and have a location so close to home. It means everything, she said. For me to be able to have a location where the community can call home, I think that's important. Class Fitness Studio is located on Route 44, Unit 22 of 1470 New State Highway, Route 44, in Raynham. All right. Looking deeper in there, in the paper. Nurses say patient violence is on the rise. For the past 10 years, the 44-year-old Rutland native has worked as an emergency room nurse at UMass Memorial Health Alliance Clinton Hospital in the Leominster classes. Sarah Walker always knew she wanted to be a nurse. What Walker doesn't love is taking verbal abuse from some patients, which can escalate into physical assaults. Walker says she's been spit on, scratched, and struck. She had surgery and missed 16 months of work from injuries after trying to hold down a patient who became violent and threatened to harm himself. Workers' comp paid 60% of Walker's salary while she recovered, but it wasn't enough to cover her bills. She was forced to sell her home and use some of the proceeds to meet her expenses. Walker suffered another patient attack in January and hasn't been able to work since because of her injuries. She's scheduled for surgery in the coming days. "I'm just terrified there's going to be a day when I don't come home," said Walker. "I'm terrified I'll lose a coworker." She repeatedly asked UMass Memorial Health for police details in the hospital to protect the staff against violent patients, but nothing has changed. "Mall cops" is how she described what's there now. Walker belongs to the Massachusetts Nurses Association, which demands more protection for workers. The union supports pending legislation at the State House that would require employers to develop and implement programs to prevent workplace violence in hospitals and other healthcare settings. The Massachusetts Health and Hospitals Association and the Service Employees International Union, which represents nearly 80,000 healthcare workers in Massachusetts, backs the bill. There's currently no requirement that healthcare facilities report assaults to state agencies. Plus, district attorneys learn about assaults only if they're felonies. The union believes those issues mean a scarcity of data on the number of actual assaults. The Department of Labor Standards, which is responsible for protecting worker safety, should receive the data, along with the State Department of Public Health, which licenses hospitals and district attorneys. State law requires hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers to report serious reportable events to the Department of Public Health. The state's definition of serious reportable events focuses on injuries to patients. There is also a category for potential criminal events. The numbers in that category for hospitals statewide that offer a high level of care are publicly reported through 2022. And show physical assaults in Massachusetts jumped from 45 in 2018 to 80 in 2022. Over half of those assaults resulted in serious injury where caused cases of patients attacking clinical staff, security officers, or EMTs, encounters that often led to missed work time. The union believes violence in healthcare settings is on the rise. It claims nearly 7 out of 10 nurses in Massachusetts report having experienced an assault in the workplace. The Massachusetts Health and Hospital Association reports that every 36 minutes, a Massachusetts healthcare worker is subject to a physical assault, verbal abuse, or threat. Sounds like it is worth passing that bill and protecting our healthcare workers. Also in the news, the state kicks in nearly $25 million in extra funding for literacy programs. The state announced nearly $25 million in funding to help increase early literacy among elementary students, with many districts in Worcester County getting a piece of the funding to help with initiatives aimed at the earliest readers getting up to grade level. Governor Maura Healey announced last week that $24.7 million would be handed out to 71 different school districts across the state to strengthen literacy instruction with a particular focus on students between first and third grade. "Reading is the foundation for everything students do in school and throughout their lives," Healey said. "That's why we're making historic investments to strengthen literacy instruction, support education, and help every student build the skills they need to succeed." The money will be distributed through the state's Partnership for Reading Success Massachusetts, which comprises 4 different programs that each focus on a different aspect of literacy. $10.2 million will be distributed to 13 different districts as PRISM 1 continuation grants, which will allow the districts to continue helping improve their early literacy programming so that all students can read at or above grade level by grade 3. This includes grants to the Northborough-Southborough Public Schools and for the Neshoba Regional District. In recent years, reading scores across the state have been in decline following the COVID-19 pandemic. In 2019, state reading scores were a full grade level above the national average, but as of this most recent school year, Massachusetts reading scores are only a half grade above the national average. A study and review conducted by Education Scorecard cites that students from wealthy communities have made bigger improvements recovering from COVID-19 than students from lower-income districts, meaning any extra funding from the state can help bridge the gap high-need students might be facing. We're committed to strengthening the implementation of high-quality literacy instruction and continuing to address persistent disparities in access and achievement, Elementary and Secondary Education Commissioner Pedro Martinez said. Our work through PRISM, grants, and literacy launch institutes is designed to help all students become strong readers and writers. Also in the news, alligator Alcatraz suit says that Florida withheld records. Weeks after alligator Alcatraz closed its doors, environmental groups have updated a lawsuit with new allegations that state and federal officials withheld records that helped keep the Everglades Detention Center open for nearly a year. In June of 2025, Friends of the Everglades filed a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security for failing to follow the National Environmental Policy Act, which requires an environmental impact review before construction starts on major federal projects. In the amended lawsuit filed on August 12th in federal court in Miami, the groups argue officials did not disclose records showing Florida applied for federal funding for the facility. According to the filing, judges later ruled without that information and incorrectly concluded that the state had not sought federal assistance for the project. Florida hastily set up the immigration detention camp at a former jet port in the Everglades after Florida Attorney General James Utmeyer conceived the plan in the summer of 2025. It was estimated to have cost more than $1 billion in taxpayer funds. On August 21, 2025, U.S. District Court Judge Kathleen Williams found that the project was a joint state-federal venture and ordered the facility to be dismantled within 60 days. On a September 4, 2025 ruling by the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals followed and is the focus of the recent amended lawsuit. In the September ruling, a split appellate panel stopped an order that would have forced the site to be dismantled. The judges concluded it was undisputed that Florida had not applied for federal funding, meaning the project did not have to go through federal environmental review. Attorneys for Friends of the Everglades and the Center for Biological Diversity now argue that assumption was incorrect. According to documents obtained through a public records lawsuit, the Florida Division of Emergency Management prepared an initial federal funding application in June of 2025. The application reached the Federal Emergency Management Agency no later than July 4th, roughly 2 months before the appeals court issued its ruling. The Court of Appeals said more than once that the Florida Department of Emergency Management had not applied for federal funding, said an attorney for the Friends of the Everglades. We now know this was wrong. The environmental groups say those funding records were never shared with the appellate court and that judges made their decision without information they believe would have changed the outcome. The groups behind the lawsuit argue that once Florida applied for federal funding, those reviews should have taken place before the detention center was built and began operating. The amended complaint also introduces claims under the Endangered Species Act, arguing that the facility's construction and operation harmed protected wildlife within and around Big Cypress National Preserve. And the next story kindergarten vaccination rates continue to decline. U.S. kindergarten vaccination coverage fell by 0.1% during the 2025 school year, continuing a downward trend that has seen declines every year except one since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. Coverage ranged from 92% for the diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussis vaccine to 92% for measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and the polio vaccine. The CDC said coverage for the MMR, DTaP, polio, varicella vaccines decreased in more than half the states from the previous year. It's continuing a long trend in the wrong direction, said John Grabenstein, a pharmacist who previously ran the Department of War's vaccine programs for troops and their families. It's not like a tipping point. If trends hold, we'll have twice as many measles cases this year as we did the previous year. It's just going to keep getting worse. This is the first data for kindergartners who have enrolled in school since RFK Jr., a noted vaccine skeptic, became the country's health secretary. Trump recently signed an executive order calling for fewer childhood vaccinations by limiting the inoculation schedule to 11 immunizations. The order also recommended splitting the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine into three shots taken at separate visits. Exemptions from one or more vaccines among kindergartners in the U.S. increased to 4.2% during last year's school year. Something to keep an eye on. The number of students of kindergarten attending school without documentation on completing the MMR vaccine series was about 280,000 during last school year. Some states shared better than others when it came to the combined MMR shot. Texas, which experienced a severe measles outbreak last year just before kindergarten data was collected, saw MMR rates stay the same year over year, an improvement compared to previous time drops. California, meanwhile, dropped more than any year since the COVID-19 pandemic. According to the CDC data, the states with the highest vaccination rates for the MMR vaccine were West Virginia, Connecticut, Maine, New York, and Mississippi. The states with the lowest rates were Idaho, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Utah, and Arizona. With over 2,500 confirmed measles infections so far this year, the United States is experiencing the highest number of cases in more than 35 years. That is just crazy. All right. Quickly looking to sports. In youth baseball, they're tied together for life. Been there, done that. It was a blast, as you might expect. Bridgewater's run to this year's Little League World Series has rekindled fond memories among the coaches and players who were part of Braintree American's trip to South Williamsport, Pennsylvania, just last summer. It's a nostalgic feeling to see another team close by go to Williamsport, said Braintree assistant coach P.J. Kippenhan, whose son Owen was a first baseman and pitcher on that team. It brings back the run that we went on last year. It's etched in our memories for sure. Like Braintree last year, Bridgewater punched its ticket to the Little League World Series by capturing the New England Regional Tournament in Bristol, Connecticut. Bridgewater held its World Series debut last night against Metro Region champ Bayonne, New Jersey, last night. If you haven't seen the news, Bayonne won the game in a walk-off home run, which has to be heartbreaking for the Bridgewater team. Also, in one last story, let's go to Brockton's Jordans, featured on a BKFC card at Fenway Park. Shane Jordan enrolled at Capella Boxing Gym when he was suspended from school as a Brockton High freshman. Instead of getting in trouble in the streets, my dad brought me to the gym, and from there I never left. Jordan played baseball and basketball and was enrolled in Brockner High's Azure Building, all while he pursued bouts in the Junior Olympics and Golden Glove circuits as a teenager. Now he's preparing for his second fight at Fenway Park this year. He will stand across from Daniel Pettit in the bantamweight division of the upcoming BKFC 92 Bare Knuckle Boxing Card on Saturday, August 29th. He previously appeared on the Fight Night at Fenway Round 2 card in June and suffered a defeat versus Axel Lopez. "I can't even put it into words right now," Jordan said of his return to Fenway. "It's pretty, pretty surreal. Boxing has brought me everything in my life," he said after the BKFC 92 press conference in July. "Shout out to the legends, Rocky Marciano and Marvin Hagler. I'm just trying to live in their footsteps and keep Brockton's history as one of the best fighting towns going." Jordan is part of a wave of local fighters on the card, joining East Bridgewater's Joe Lauzon, a former UFC mainstay, in the welterweight division, and Abington's Peter Slippery Pete Barrett in the lightweight division. "This is a city of fighters, a city that doesn't quit," BKFC founder and president David Feldman said during the press conference in July. "That's why it fits so well with Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, is why I'm so proud to bring this thing here. This will be the best combat sport event that Boston has ever seen." Jordan, who goes by the name Sugar, received his first BKFC opportunity while living in Los Angeles, where he earned a 5-round draw against the then unbeaten David Diaz during BKFC Knucklemania 4 in April 2024. He said it's his most memorable bout of his career, and he delivered the most powerful strike he's ever delivered that night, causing a fracture to Diaz's orbital bone. Jordan also works as a personal trainer and trains celebrity social media influencers Bryce Hall, Sneeko, and N3ON for their boxing appearances and live streams. Jordan, as a on his message for young Brockton kids, said, "Follow your dreams, no matter how much negative you have around you. If you stay true to yourself, follow a purpose, and stay consistent, you can make anything happen. Keep working hard." And then finally, a Patriot star pens a foreword to a writer's new book. Faith, Perseverance Connects Plymouth, and author Padula with Henderson. Special connections between people happen when you least expect them. A chance meeting between Plymouth author Stacy Padula and New England Patriots star Trayvon Henderson brought about an unexpected friendship that has evolved into a working friendship relationship. "I met Trayvon at a youth event a few years back, and we instantly hit it off," explained Padula, a Silver Lake graduate who has lived in Plymouth for a decade with her husband Tim O'Halloran. "We talked about collaborating somehow because of how my book series lined up with his life." That collaboration became Henderson writing the foreword to Padula's new book, Gripped, Part 6, The Duncan Legacy, which was released in Maine. The young adult book series follows Taylor Duncan, the star quarterback for a high school football team in Massachusetts. Everything was going as planned for Taylor until a severe knee injury derailed his football career and leads to Duncan turning to painkillers and trying to fight his way out from underneath the addiction while rebuilding strained relations with his family as well as the community. It's a slice of life story that takes place in a small town in Massachusetts. It's a faith-based story about how the person and the community are both impacted by what happened to Taylor. Issues addressed in the series include addiction, mental health, and redemption through faith. Recovering from a major injury and finding the faith needed to get through the trying times of working his way back onto the football field are something the Henderson family is familiar with. Growing up in Hopewell, Virginia, playing football was Henderson's escape from family challenges, community violence, parental separation, and struggles with anger and depression. That escape was taken away his sophomore year at Ohio State by a major foot injury that ended his season, explained Henderson in a press release about the book. Gripped tells a story about real life issues and points to the only one who can help people overcome their struggles, and that is Jesus Christ. Before my injury, I was broken and living in such darkness, just like Taylor. Jesus opened my eyes to the truth, and his grace saved me and changed my life, just like readers will see in the lives of Taylor and other characters. Henderson battled back from those dark days to become New England's second-round pick in the 2025 NFL Draft. He quickly cemented his spot in the backfield with 911 yards on the ground and touched 10 touchdowns in his rookie season. Padula said, when you meet Henderson, you would never guess that he was a rising star in the NFL. Trayvon is the humblest person I have ever met. He's a selfless person with a true passion for helping and connecting with other people. He's just a normal person, and he doesn't want anyone to see him as anything different than that. And that, my friends, is the reading of the Brockton Enterprise for today, Thursday, August 20th. Have a great day, a great weekend. I will read again next Thursday. This is Mark White of the Talking Information Center.